And welcome to yet another episode of your favourite football podcast. It is The Reducer with myself, Howard H. Smith, my good friend and Liverpool supporter, David Klein.
Hello.
And my good friend and Man City supporter, Dave Rothney.
Hello.
Hello, boys. So, dear listener, that was a bit James Richardson, sorry. Except, no, with him, it's a bit more, well, dear listener, and a bit creepy and a bit over-friendly, but I love him anyway. There we go. Let's start with an advert for yet another podcast that's on The Athletic. The Totally Football Show, brought to your ears by The Athletic. Anyway, we recorded this episode a week ago, or rather, we all sat on Zoom a week ago and did this episode, but some dickhead, me, didn't record it. So a few technical issues, we're going to have to go again. But what we did was, on the back of our Fancy Dan's 11, we did the Cloggers 11. Now, Cloggers, for those of you who do not know what a clogger is, but I'm sure you get the idea. Cloggers are people who are going to be kicking the Fancy Dan 11 up in the air. So these are basically players who have got no problem meeting out some footballing justice / committing footballing crimes. So we already have the 11, which is a new take on things, because we wanted to get something out of the completely wasted hour. So let's start. Mr. Rothney has the 11. Let's start at the back. Where did we go goalkeeping wise?
Tony Schumacher.
Harold
Schumacher.
Yeah, not Harold Shipman. Although
he's in a different 11.
nearly decapitated Battiston in 1982 World Cup, the flying kung fu kick, as it was.
The weird thing of all the famous Schumachers, there isn't a Tony, I don't think, but you know, maybe there is and I'm just not aware of it.
I don't want this to be left to simmer. Harold Schumacher was known as Harry Tony Schumacher.
Fucking hell.
Yeah. I'm back in my box now, but I've said it.
I could see you doing some serious little Googling there, and I was wondering what was going to come out of it.
Check my files.
So he was, that was his pet name then?
He was called Harold Anton Schumacher, hence Tony Schumacher.
Right. Yeah. Or as Battiston calls him, cunt.
Yeah.
I mean, still to this day, I'm going to go there. I'm going to say, if somebody said to me, what is the worst foul you've ever seen? I got to go with that.
Yeah, without a doubt.
Certainly about goalkeeper, yeah.
No, I know. I'm going for anyone. Because if you look at that challenge, it's fucking head high.
Yeah.
He breaks the cheekbone and knocks his teeth out and is concussed. I mean, you know, that's quite serious.
For younger listeners who haven't seen it, it is freely available on YouTube, so check it out. So it's Schumacher's challenge on Battiston, French striker, 1982 World Cup.
Can I just say as well, anybody listening to this who's 45, you qualify as a younger listener, you poor bastard. Serves you right from listening to these three twats.
Yeah, the annals of ancient history, 1982.
So we've got Harold Tony Schumacher in goal.
Hey.
And then we go to our back four, which is and it's Stuart Pearce, nice. Left back.
No nonsense left back.
Yeah, exactly. No nonsense left back. And, you know, he had a brilliant, and he's a legend, an absolute legend. And that's he was robust. He was a robust left back, you know.
Yeah.
If you got kicked by Stuart Pearce, you stayed kicked.
I do recall he seemed to have the biggest legs in the world.
Thighs. Fucking ridiculous thighs.
Absolute tree trunk thighs on him. Yeah. The quads on him.
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. Grealish would be getting no attention if Stuart Pearce was in that fucking England side.
Yeah.
Do you know what I mean? Although, is that more of a man thing? Women are like, oh, the calves. Whereas men are like, fuck, you know, look at those fucking thighs. Jesus. Do you know what I mean? It's like, because the power comes from the thighs. Yeah. Yeah. That's where you're generating, you know, that's where he's generating all that power.
I think that's because he had pace, didn't he? I think that's why he had these massive machines on him.
He was a big, strong lad. I remember seeing when he played at Man City, we were playing, I think it was Crystal Palace, Yeah, it was at Selhurst Park. And it was just funny. Like, we lost the game 1-0 maybe. And I remember in the second half, Stuart Pearce was obviously left back and he was over the far side, the side opposite where the dugout was. And he committed this like hideous challenge on the Crystal Palace player. And it was a straight red. And it was one of those where the referee went to get his card out and Pearce just didn't wait for that to happen.
Yeah.
And he walked off. But he didn't go to the dugout. He just walked off, hopped over the advertising hoarding and sat. There were some empty seats and just sat in the stand. And that was his day done, you know. It's just
Well, another Stuart Pearce story, and that's a cracker, Rothers. I kind of vaguely remember it. The other one I remember is Stuart Pearce deciding not to come back out at half time because he'd broken his leg in the halfway through the first half. Carry on. At half time. Do you know what? That is stinging a bit.
Yeah.
When he was at West Ham, that was.
Yeah, and we can't let this go without a Clough story, which is my favourite, which shows how times have changed with the kind of international call-ups. When Stuart Pearce was called up for England, Brian Clough, who was obviously at Nottingham Forest then, a young player, and Brian Clough called him into his office. And forgive the... I'm going to do a half-assed impression of Brian Clough.
No, go for it.
He calls Stuart Pearce, goes, Clough, he called me in. He goes, I was really excited. And Clough said, so you've been selected for England. And Stuart Pearce went, yeah. He goes, do you think you're good enough? Stuart Pearce goes, yeah. He goes, well, I don't. Now get out. That would not happen now, would it?
I've got to throw my Clough story in there, as I always do, when Lee Chapman scored a hat-trick only 5 or 6 games into his Nottingham Forest career. And he comes in after the game, expecting a bit of praise. And Clough says, you, Chapman, hey, next time you score a hat-trick, don't go celebrating with the supporters. You come and celebrate with me. I'm the one who fucking bought you.
That's for future reference, the Shithouse podcast we're going to do.
Shithouse
in his own players.
And then, so let's move into the central defence. Well, actually, no, on right back, we've got Pat van den Hauw, which older listeners will know, played for Tottenham.
Pat.
Yeah, well, also, he was also, such was the kind of ferocity of his challenges that I remember the Tottenham fans used to go, ooh, Pat van den Hauw, whenever he kind of went in on a challenge. So, a robust, meaty challenger of the ball.
Yeah.
Often the man.
One thing, I mean, obviously, we know the whole 11, so without wanting to gallop ahead here, but one thing that's become apparent is that, and this should come as no surprise to us or to the listeners, but there's not really any current players. There's probably not even a player from the last 10 years in this 11 because of the way, you know, football has gone. Now with VAR even more so, etc.
Yeah, yeah.
You know, you are not... I mean, Roy Keane, whilst being a really good player, is probably getting overlooked by a lot of the major teams now because his game would mean he would be suspended so often that... You'd Keane has to like massively change his game, and that's somebody who is of the Champions League era. But as we go on in this, and so just in case you're listening and you're shouting out, but what about so and so and what about so and so? If they've played in the last 10 years, any one of these guys is just ripping their head off for a laugh.
Well, and also we kind of went with Premier League because, and I guess they've got a bit. Because there were players that we talked about, like Sergio Ramos, for example.
Yes.
You know, and also, I mean, Luis Suarez, you know, chewy for biting. Was it Patrice Evra that he bit?
Somebody in the World Cup as well. Yeah.
But we kind of discounted them. But, I mean, Ramos is slightly more cynical, isn't he? I mean, he's sort of more underhand.
He's more the Shithouse 11. He's absolutely captain of the Shithouse 11.
Yeah.
So who else do we got?
Well, in central defence, which is interesting, and Howard and Dave can probably argue that, well, Norman Hunter and Eric Dyer is in there. And we, so please explain why that is.
When you read that 11, I thought there's a glaring error here, because funnily enough, my big long speech about current Premier League players, fuck me, the next one is one.
Eric Dyer.
But yeah, and not for that reason, but even when you read it out, I just thought, nah. Nice, polite Eric Dyer.
No.
Okay. Well, he's not got a long list of suspensions. He's not regularly getting booked.
He's got a challenge on him though.
Yeah, but so have like 90% of footballers in the right circumstances.
Well, we'll come back to that. But wasn't there a reason why Eric Dyer was included? Wasn't there a specific challenge that one of you alluded to?
I mentioned the challenge on Sergio Ramos.
Ah, right. Yeah.
Where he ended up, his face literally ploughed the field. It was the challenge was so brutal on him, which was great because it was a few months after he'd done his challenge on Salah in the...
And there we go. There's how we unpick how Eric Dyer has ended up in this 11. And his Dave still not got over fucking Ramos getting away with crippling Salah in the European Cup final. That's what he's fucking doing in there.
Shit, I've been outed.
I'm going to be harsh on this, and I'm going to say personally that I think we should be looking for somebody to replace Eric Dyer. But we can come back to Eric.
Yeah.
So let's say we've got a spot to fill there. Who's next?
Well, also we just need to comment on Norman Hunter because some people won't know who he was. So
yeah.
He even had his nickname, and this is one of our big things. If you've got a nickname which suggests violence, you're in the team.
Yeah.
Although the nickname was inspired by the fans, we actually had a little the fans had a banner made which was like Norman Hunter bites your legs, and that became his nickname, Norman Bite Your Legs Hunter, it sounds a bit pathetic now, doesn't it?
Does it a little bit?
It's like, pretty much dated.
Scratch it, Norman.
Scratch your eyes. Scratch your eyes out.
Norman Handbags Hunter.
Yeah. No, Norman, go on a date, turns up late, Hunter. Oh, dear me.
Yeah. Bite
Norman
your legs.
Doesn't tip in a restaurant, Hunter.
He bites your legs. Watch out for him.
It just sounds a bit
dated.
Yeah. A bit
different.
Cute.
Different era, like 1970s, wasn't it? So it literally
Absolutely.
Is dated.
Well, the thing is, there's him. There was him and Chopper Harris, wasn't it? And there was like that. The two of them. I mean, there's a nickname.
Actually, because Chopper has different connotations.
Well, it does. But to be fair. Like Chopper Harris that's probably a better nickname than like bite your legs.
So after much discussion, the midfield.
Oh, this midfield, when you read it out, I was just like, oh, come on.
Terrifying.
We nailed that. We fucking nailed that.
We've got a midfield of Roy Keane, Joey Barton, Dennis Wise and Vinnie Jones.
Yeah.
I mean, right away.
Nobody's getting through that.
I mean, you walk in a pub, those four have stood at a bar, got a beer in their hands. You walk in a pub, they all turn around and look at you. You just spin round on your heel and walk back
and
out.
And leave, yeah, yeah.
And that's off the pitch in a bar.
Yeah. And, I mean, the thing about Keane is that he was a brilliant footballer, but you can't let things go like the challenge on Alf Inge Haaland. Who's the dad of Erling, a challenge where they deliberately said in his autobiography, he deliberately tried to hurt him. And, mm-hmm. I mean, Roy Keane, I mean, okay, I'm biased. I'm a City fan. You know.
Yeah, no, I'm a Man United fan. Sorry, I'm a Man United fan. Why would I say that? Why would I even say that?
Freudian.
What the fuck is wrong with me? Jesus Christ. Right, this podcast from now on is you two. Like, I need to be fucking suspended. I need to be investigated by Ofcom or a Knob Rot or whoever looks after
like,
podcasts.
You sound like Erling Haaland because he was saying, because he's a City fan, but he keeps saying he's a Leeds fan.
Yeah, very good. Well, no, he is a Leeds fan. He just accidentally said that he was a City fan for the benefit of the Man City marketing department.
That's what you've just done.
Yeah. So anyway, as a Leeds fan, I'm gonna knit together two threads here, and I apologise. I might have told this story before. You've both probably heard it before. But firstly, it ties together the Keane ban, and it. Well, you'll see. So basically, Keane admitted in his autobiography, because we were working on, were we working on Enough the Post at the time? Not Enough the Post. We were working on Rosette.
Rosette.
We might have been at the time. So anyway,
yeah.
That's a TV show the three of us used to work on.
Back in
BBC
the late 90s.
Choice. BBC Choice. Yeah.
Happy days.
Happy days.
Yeah. Happy days. So back in those days, right, Keane launched his autobiography, said he deliberately injured Haaland, and it effectively ended Haaland's career. He played on a little bit, but he was just never the same player, and it did for him. And he got an 8-game ban. I think he got a 6-game ban, right? Around this time, I was sent off playing in a Sunday league game. I was given a yellow card for a bad foul. I carried on. I made another bad foul. And the referee said, "One more of anything out of you and you're off." And about 10
Very
minutes
lenient.
Later,
Very
about
lenient.
10 minutes later, another challenge. And he just went, "Right, you, come here." And I just went, "Fair enough, ref." I walked straight off the pitch. I did a Stuart Pearce. I didn't wait. Off I went. I knew there was another story I was going to rope in here. So I'm now sat down, Stuart Pearce style, edge of the pitch, not with the fans, but with my girlfriend, having a fag. And there's two players on the pitch, our team, our captain and our vice captain are both going, Howard, come back on, come back, come back. So I run up and they go, "He hasn't sent you off. He hasn't sent you off." And I was like, "Oh, right." And they said, "Go and speak to him." I said, okay. So my players have got me back. And so I've gone up to him and said, "Okay, ref, you know, sorry about that." And he said, "Right, I wasn't going to send you off, but you left the pitch without my permission. So second yellow, now you're off." At which point I said to him, "Does the power you have on a Sunday morning make up for the lack of it in the rest of your life?" And that is what I shouldn't have said. Yeah, although I heartfelt meant it. And when I actually had to say those words again in front of an FA panel, given the entire story up to that point, none of them were like, "Oh, that's out of order," or anything else. And I did say it and said, "You know, I'm not proud of that, but given the circumstances," and one of them just went, "Understandable." And I just thought, right, you're on my side here. So my ban was 8 games, 2 more than Roy Keane. And I had an £85 fine, which at Sunday level is fucking mad. You usually find like 50, 20 quid, 30 quid. So when I appealed, I had my ban reduced to 1 game and my fine reduced to £20, which was basically the FA saying, yeah, he was an absolute dickhead and he shouldn't have done that. So there you go. That's the end of the story. I was hoping it might come to a decent climax, but as it is, it's just sort of petered out, really.
That's good. No, there's a few things to unpick there. First of all, I think Hang on.
The end of it is, there was then an article in the non-league newspaper, because I was working at a paper at the time and we had a journalist there who freelanced for them. I ended up on page 3 with a picture of me and the result of the inquiry. And the story said, the story was sent off for not being sent off.
That's a good story.
Yeah, I like that. That's a short film, that is.
You should have told us that, because I don't think I'd have put you in this.
You put me in the 11.
I'd have put you in this 11. Well, I love the way that you had an FA panel.
I mean, there's all sorts going on. It's there's a shit housing going on. There's clogging going on.
You might have read the... I think that in the local paper report about you, I might have it somewhere. There's a quote from you, isn't it, that says, when the seagulls follow the trawler.
Yes, that's the one. That is me, yeah, yeah.
There's egomaniac going on as well.
The weird thing is, right, there we are in this room in Harrow, right, of a building, of a municipal building. There's like these three old white blokes behind, you know, behind, but they look like sort of judges sat behind, you know, this desk. Our manager has come with me and he sat next to me. And they say only, you know, they can only speak to me. I'm the only person who's allowed to speak to the board, and they're speaking to me. Manager goes to contribute a point on my behalf. And one of them just looks at me and says, can you inform your manager that we can only listen to you. So I just turned around to him and went, all right, John, what is it you want to ask? What is it you want to say? So he says it to me, and then I have to say it.
Wow.
Yeah.
This is unbelievable. There's more rigor and due diligence going on with your case than there is in regards to some like elite level Premier League stuff. That's amazing.
I think he's a nasty piece of work.
I do. I've changed my opinion about him. In fact, he
supports Man United.
Yeah.
And fuck off.
And he shithouses refs.
It's all coming out.
Bullying.
You think you know someone.
Oh, you've got me, boys. You've got me. Right. You've got me.
So I think nobody can argue with Keane being in there. Joey Barton, of course, I mean, you know, he was pretty... I mean, I remember, obviously, he played at City for many years, got into several scrapes. I mean, he's just one of those players that just seemed to... It's like the definition of insanity is repeating the same behaviour and expecting to get a different result. I don't think Joey Barton ever expected to get a different result. He just used to get sent off. Then he gets sent off again. He never seemed to change. And I remember, I mean, he was even the star or the rogue on in the famous Man City game, the Aguero goal. Let's not forget, Joey Barton was playing for QPR that day and he got sent off. And I was at that game and it was like one of these sendings off where it's the opposite side, the opposite end of the scale to the Stuart Pearce. I'm going to walk off before the ref has even pulled his card. Joey Barton was shown his card and then he starts a fight with everybody. He's like, he's given the card. Mika Richards is coming on to try and pull him away. And then he starts a fight with the City bench. This is in front of all the City fans. I mean, it was unbelievable. And I think shortly after that, QPR went scored to go 2-1 up. So it was kind of one of those days. Of course, it ended out the best day of any City fan's life.
And they stayed up as well. So, you know, it was all good for them. And so you've got the weird thing is, at the end of that game, you've got Man City fans delirious, yeah, but Joey Barton can fuck off and should never, like, set foot in the stadium again. QPR fans are delirious because they've been at an amazing historical game. They've stayed up and Joey Barton can fuck off and never set foot in their stadium again. It's like, well done, Joey. You've managed to, like... But in fairness, when you hear the whole story, an unnamed QPR player says to Joey Barton, try and take one of them with you.
Wow.
And that's all the encouragement Mr. Joseph Barton needs. Wow. Yeah, try and take one of them with you. So he sets about everybody in the team.
Wow.
So... But of all the people, Aguero. He goes and knees Aguero.
Yeah.
Out of all the people.
Yeah, no, it's true. Anyway, so he's in. And then
he's in.
And then we've got Vinnie Jones.
Vinnie is the prime example of a leopard that can't change its spots. The only manager who managed to do it, and the only time that he managed to stay in control was at Leeds. He is still very, very highly regarded in Leeds. We didn't want to sell him. We shouldn't have sold him. Howard Wilkinson admits he shouldn't have sold him. And he was part of the team that got us out of the Championship. And I'll never forget, on the final day, Bournemouth, which is remembered for us smashing up Bournemouth and all the rest of it, Vinny, we get a free kick about 10 yards into their half. Referee goes, blows it up. Vinnie Jones picks the ball up and you see him say something to the ref. And the ref just laughs. And clearly Vinnie Jones has said, can I take this quickly? And the ref's just laughed like, oh, Vinnie Jones wants to take a quick free kick. He just smashes it, hits the bar. from about 10 yards inside their half, hits the bar. And he was booked once that season, I think. And in the following Premier League season, I think he was booked once. He literally, he's like two or three bookings in his entire Leeds career. And he still says one of the main reasons for that is he turned up, started giving it the large in a game. And after the game, who pulls him aside? Gordon Strachan just pulls him aside and says, "What the fuck do you think you're doing? We don't do that here. That's not what you're here for. Don't ever do that again." And that was it.
Yeah.
And that was it. You know, he was kept on side by Wilkinson and Strachan. And I think you look at Vinnie Jones, his career, and too often I think there wasn't a player in a team that would turn around to Vinnie Jones and go, "Oi, turn it down, calm it down, focus." He never had that player other than Gordon Strachan at Leeds.
Yeah.
He was always in charge. He told others what to do. And what he needed was he just needed to be kept on a bit tighter leash.
So is he still in the team? Is he still in the Cloggers 11?
Oh, well, Gordon Strachan's not part of the management team here. He's fucking banging it, isn't he?
Yeah, that's true. And he's got Dennis Wise on the other side of him. So,
oh, yeah, don't fall asleep. Yeah, not old Dennis, because you might be having a nice little kip in your bunk, but Dennis has got no problem with walking over and punching you in the face several times because you're asking for it the way you're sleeping. What a cunt. Just my own personal view there.
Yeah, of course.
Yeah. No, Dennis Wise, yeah. It was on a tour. And yeah, just straight in on a player asleep.
He's a skillful player though. He had good pass, range of passing and free kicks and all the rest of it.
Yeah, yeah, no. He's probably the classiest midfielder in this midfield, to be fair, that's a fairly low.
Let's not forget he went on to play at Chelsea and was decorated there.
But again, I think to Howard's point on Vinnie Jones, I think it's the influence of a decent manager and a different style of play. And I think
I
can't remember, I don't follow Chelsea, but I can't remember who his managers were there when they left.
Vialli.
Yeah, so it's different, isn't it?
I mean, was Hoddle there?
He wasn't Chelsea. I don't know if he was there when Dennis Wise was.
I don't think he was there when Dennis Wise was there. But, right. I mean, you don't look at Wise and think, "Oh, yeah, there's a Hoddle player." But you do look at Wise and think, "Where do you go after Chelsea and Wimbledon, you nasty piece of shit?" Oh, of course, Millwall.
Yeah.
Never played outside of London as well. Do you know what I mean? He's got that horrible rat cockney face, hasn't he? Do you know what I mean? Oh, apples and pears. Oh,
although he did manage Leeds,
a razor.
Though, didn't he?
He's a better looking Lee Bowyer look. Slightly better looking Lee Bowyer.
Slightly less rat like, I agree. I agree.
Less rat like.
We should do, if we do the rat 11, those two
little,
are centimetres.
A little almost feminine, some of his features are quite soft. A soft little
like
rat
voice.
Face.
Like his voice.
A soft rat face. Yeah. I hope he's not listening to this because he's gonna hunt me down and hollow me out and fill me with hummus.
Yeah, true. Whatever you do, don't fall asleep in your Range Rover down a side street. You know, that's all I'm saying, because who knows what can happen then. Anyway, who else we got in this, Dave?
So on from the thinking woman's Lee Bowyer, we're going to go up front and we've got Duncan Ferguson and John Fashion.
So was that our entire midfield four then?
Yeah, four. Yeah, four, yeah. Keane, Barton, Jones and Wise.
Yeah. Fucking hell. Yeah.
And then we've got Duncan Disorderly Ferguson and John Fash the Bash Fashion up front.
Brilliant.
I mean, I'll just say this about Duncan Ferguson. I love Duncan Ferguson. So I just want to put that out there because no disrespect to him at all. And it's a shame that he's not. I think when Ancelotti left, I think Everton should have.
Yeah, definitely. Totally agree.
Manager, because I think he'd be a great manager.
Yeah,
but anyway, but he's still. You know,
that's happened a couple of times. They've passed over. It's like the guy's Everton through and through. Just give him the job at least. Can't do any worse, can he?
Yeah, but that has become a bit of a cliche, isn't it? I mean, it's like there's some big cliches around in modern football, and that is, you know, get them out, get the kids in, play the kids, you know, which always amazes me. Do you know what I mean? These are supporters of teams who go, "Oh, yeah, go and play the kids. And you go like, "When's the last time you lot produced any kids?" Do you know what I mean? And it's like, it's us. I'll talk about us, Leeds. You know, we've got players who go, "Oh, play the kids. And you go, "Well, Well, in the last 10 years, in the last 10 years, when we had to sell all our great players, where did they all go? Where, you know, how have they all done brilliantly? No.
Yeah.
You know, yeah. But people get obsessed with it, and I don't know why.
Yeah.
And it's play the kids. And the other one is, oh, he knows the club.
Snapping it off. He's got the club's name running through him. Yeah. Like a stick of rock. Yeah.
You know, oh, he was there 10 years. He knows the club. Fuck off.
Yeah.
Jesus.
Well, it's like Steven Gerrard going back to Liverpool. No, thanks.
Well, hang on. Hasn't he already left? Wasn't he training youth team and he left to go to Rangers?
Yeah, but they were saying Klopp out, get Gerrard in. It's like, oh, really?
Nobody is saying that.
Some were.
No, right. Freshly somewhere. Sacked.
Yeah.
Freshly sacked from doing
Pre-fresh sacking. Pre-fresh sacking. When Klopp was out, we're having a dip in form. Get Klopp out. Hashtag Klopp out. Get Gerrard in.
Nobody really.
He knows the club. He's Liverpool through and through and all this nonsense.
Nobody was really saying Klopp out.
Well, anyone who actually understands football, yeah. I mean, it's just ridiculous. Football fans are idiots, aren't they, largely? Let's be honest.
We are, yes.
Well, I'm not a fan, as I say.
Absolutely. We're all supporters.
There's a lot to unpick there. So, but that is our Cloggers 11. Feel free to disagree, but you know that's who we put out, and our cloggers we'll put them up against anyone really, and they'll come away with a scrappy 0-0 draw with only 7 players on the pitch.
Who was on our bench?
We had Mick Harford, we had Ben Thatcher. I mean, this is the squad. Elhaz Diouf.
What I want you to do is go in, play, get between the two centre halves and spit on them.
To a certain extent, we have kind of glossed over old Fash the Bash there.
For a bit, we have a little
chat
bit
about Duncan. Yeah. By the way, Duncan Ferguson, the only thing I can think of is that header against Man United, you know, where from a corner and
bang. Yeah.
Ferguson scores a header, and when you pause it as he's about to fucking head it, he's about half a person higher in the air than any Man United.
Yeah, yeah.
It's ridiculous.
He was the Erling Haaland of his day.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. All right. Okay.
Discuss. Yeah, yeah.
You can have that, you smug bastard.
Yeah. Well, you know, we lost to Brentford.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. The heart bleeds.
Fash the Bash. What I always found the least surprising thing when I heard it was that, and in his spare time, John likes to do karate. He's like a karate black belt. It's like, really? Okay, well, that makes total sense.
Yeah.
The problem is he forgets that he's not doing karate when he's playing football.
Hang on. Didn't he went on to do, I'm pulling this out of my arse here. Didn't he go on to do Gladiators?
Yes. Yeah. He was a TV presenter, yeah.
Yeah.
He's very softly, he presents really nicely, very softly spoken and genteel. You know.
He's one of those players off the pitch.
Yeah, softly
spoken, intelligent.
Absolute beast on the pitch.
Yeah. Mark Hughes syndrome, I think it's known as.
Yes, that's true.
Yeah, there's two types of psycho, aren't there? There's ones that like that are absolute sort of babies off the pitch and love their family. And then and then there are people like Roy Keane who just won't stop. They just feed off bile. Bile is their oxygen.
Yeah. Yeah.
Well, Roy Keane's so funny. I just laugh at him all.
Oh, yeah, no.
He's so unintentionally funny, the things he says.
Oh, no, he is good value. But, yeah, John Fashion, but Howard, because you're a striker. So what was Fash? Was he any good?
Look, Fash was, I don't know, like... Duncan Ferguson, but slightly less talented.
Limited but effective, I'd say. It's kind of a bit of a blunt instrument.
Battering ram era, this.
Yeah.
You know, battering ram. You know, you stick somebody up there, you stick it up to the good, you know, you stick it up to the big guy. He's going to win them. All elbows and foreheads. He's going to win it. Win the knockdowns. Somebody be there.
The term you hear now is Shearer's doing it all the time. What he likes to do is bully. He's bullying them there. He's bullying them, you know. And it's like, well, that's all John Fashanu did. He just bullied, and then he'd score occasional goals.
The favourite word, and once you've heard it, you'll realise how much of a favourite it is. Alan Shearer's favourite word: again,
again,
again, here and again. And again.
Devastated. He's devastated there. He's lost the throw in. He's devastated.
And again. Yeah, you know. Oh, man. Yeah, can he? Can he do that?
Just... Unbelievable, as well, he says.
Yeah. Yeah. The hilariously dour Alan Shearer.
Yeah.
The man who is instantly recognizable and doesn't like being recognized.
Yeah. Takes himself a little too seriously.
Yes. Yeah. Yeah. And it's bizarre because it's like some players, you see that transformation after they've played, and it's like they don't have to toe the party line anymore. You know, players who clearly have been, you know, had things to say and never got to say them. And you know, there's more and more of those coming into punditry, which I like. With Shearer, though, it's almost like he's taken the seriousness and the focus of playing for, you know, being England captain, and he's applied that to being a pundit. And the thing is, I think he still thinks he's some sort of captain of some sort of punditry team in his head. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah.
I think he's just like, you know, I'm Alan Shearer. And it's like, hey, just a punter though now, mate, I'm afraid. Yeah. That's the thing, isn't it? You know?
Whereas Ian Wright doesn't take himself seriously at all.
Oh, Wright is there just to have a laugh, isn't he? I mean, I like about Ian Wright is that you put Ian Wright on a show and watch him disrupt the other pundits, because you can't help but get pulled into Ian Wright's world, where he's just, it's a little bit more lighthearted. And like, you know, do we all have to sit around here looking like we're at a funeral?
Yeah.
And, you know, the minute he's on Match of the Day, it improves, because Alan Shearer takes himself less seriously.
True.
More seriously.
You know? No, but he takes himself less seriously as a result of writing. Are we going to be topical? When we've done our Cloggers 11, as we've been speaking, I've just had a notification come in. Big news from the World Cup, which starts on Sunday.
Wow. Just for everybody listening, just so you know, Dave and I have got no idea what he's about to tell us, because both our phones are off. Go on.
Oh, well, Qatar bans. So this is like the caption cup. What has Qatar just banned?
Probably alcohol.
I thought everything was banned.
Alcohol.
England fans.
Gay sex.
Alcohol.
That's already banned. Bans beer.
Women.
Qatar bans beer from World Cup after 11th hour U-turn.
Brilliant. So,
what time?
At what time did it do it? 11th hour, 25 minutes ago. So 25.
So it starts on Sunday, and people bought their tickets. Qatar World Cup was announced 10 years ago.
Yeah.
And they decided they wanted to be the first game. So brought the first game forward a few months ago. Yeah. Now they've decided. I mean, to be fair, if anybody thought that like alcohol was going to be freely available over there, but my query here would be, and how does that affect sponsorship? Are there, because usually Budweiser are all over a fucking World Cup.
I mean, maybe they'll be in the fan zone still. It just says beer from World Cup stadiums. So,
from the stadiums. Right. Okay.
Yeah.
But I mean, it's just the thing is, you go back and you look at the mess, and what's been conveniently glossed over, because don't get me wrong, I am not pro Qatar and I'm not going to stick up for Qatar. But what I am going to say is in 2012, when Qatar was chosen, FIFA took the unprecedented step of awarding two World Cups at the same time. Mm. And when corruption was rife and everybody focused on Qatar, the other World Cup that they issued at that time? Russia. So that doesn't look too clever now, does it?
Yeah.
In fact, now that looks worse than Qatar. So all of this just went wrong 10 years ago.
Yeah.
And, you know, this just can't happen. Can't happen again.
But Howard, you're incisive as ever, because along with this story, it's banned in and around the perimeter of the stadium. And the ABN Bev that makes Budweiser In a tweet, since this is The Guardian, by the way, in a tweet since deleted, moments just before the news became official, the US beer brand said, well, this is awkward.
Well, yeah, deals will have been done and stuff, and stuff.
Yeah, but that, well, that's what I mean. That's why I brought it up. The thing is, also, here's an easy test for you. No one's doing this, right? It's not been mentioned on any World Cup preview or any podcast. So remember where you heard it, folks. Here's a really, really simple way of gauging: is the country excited? How does Britain feel about the World Cup? Walk into a supermarket, see if you can find a World Cup promotion on fucking anything.
I know.
No. It's... When UK supermarkets turn their backs on World Cup money, then maybe you're having it in the wrong place at the wrong fucking time. Because nothing can contribute, compare or compete with Christmas.
So a summer tournament. No.
But not for a supermarket. Yeah. Think about it. Summer tournament in the summer, everyone's figures do a nosedive.
Yeah.
Supermarkets are praying for World Cups and Euros so they can get some beer money in. It's Christmas. This is when they're making money anyway. Are we going to spend extra money on doing promotions that that can effectively lose us money if they don't take off, if people aren't into this World Cup?
Yeah.
So the simple question, how does everyone feel about the World Cup? Walk into a supermarket, dig around. Nobody, no products, no supermarkets want fuck all to do with the Qatar World Cup. So, yeah, sounds like a fuck up to me.
Do you think you'll get into it? I mean, that's the thing that, what do you feel about it? Howard, first.
I genuinely said to somebody the other day, well, when does it start? Who are we playing? And then I was like, oh, yeah, sorry, no, it's coming back to me. Yeah, okay. So first game's on Sunday. It was on Monday. It's now on Sunday. Okay. And I guess I'll watch. I'm curious. I mean, look, it's football. Of course I'm going to watch. Who am I kidding? Once it starts, will I just forget about everything and think, oh, this is a great World Cup? I don't know. We'll have to wait and see. It's still going to be fucking November outside.
Yeah.
That's for sure. So it's still going to be weird. It's still going to be odd. Also, just from a retail, from a comedy perspective, from an other events perspective, so many businesses have been praying for a normal Christmas. Yeah.
Totally.
Last year we had loads of lockdown. We haven't had a normal Christmas for how many years to get back on our feet? And this Christmas, oh, fuck. No, it's not going to be an All Cup. We've got a fucking World Cup interfering with it, which is what I've been talking to loads of comedy promoters about. Because there's two rules in comedy promotion, and that is you don't have a gig when England are playing in the Euros, and you don't have a gig when England are playing in the World Cup. And that's it. Yeah. As told to me by Peter Graham, who's been running a comedy club for over 30 years, and he said, they're the only two things I've ever fucking learned. That's it.
No, it's spot on.
Other than that,
I mean, part of me hope it's a complete fucking shit show, because they shouldn't have got it in the first place. And it's like, it's just all this horrible stuff going on in the background, like migrant workers dying and being either undocumented or not being their families not being compensated properly. Like lawyers are like trying to cover up these deaths that have happened so they don't have to pay out. We're talking that. No, FIFA's so fucking corrupt.
I don't think it's because they don't want to pay out. I think they'd gladly pay everybody to shut the fuck up and sign NDAs. They've got plenty of money.
Oh, there was a report showing they do not want to pay out. So they're limiting. They'll give you like a poor family in Nepal. If you're a Nepalese worker, I saw this report, and it's like they were happy just to get the equivalent of about 1,500 quid for losing the husband, the main breadwinner of the family. Oh, it's fucking...
It's not about the finance. You're talking about one of the richest countries in the world. It's not about the finance. It's not about the finance. You're talking about one of the richest countries in the world. They don't give a shit about the money. If you pay money, you admit liability. That's the issue. That's why they're trying to steer clear of that. And I think ultimately also, they've been very clever about it. You know, workers' deaths, right, do not include things like heat exhaustion, or respiratory diseases or conditions or anything like that. So basically they're managing to make the fatalities look smaller by ruling out any illnesses or conditions.
3,500 deaths. If that happened here or anywhere else, there'd be outrage. The fucking civil engineering, a whole place would be shut down. The whole sector would be put under scrutiny. Health and safety executive. That's like 3,500. Oh, it doesn't matter. They're just migrant workers. Fuck them. It's just rotten, wrong and rotten. So I hope it's a shit show, personally.
I'm up for a shit show, but I don't want a shit show that involves like big crowds and people stampeding and fights.
Well, that's not going to happen. They'll like just that, shoot everyone, you know? Won't they? Probably.
I somehow doubt.
Oppressive medieval regime that it is. They don't tolerate gay relationships. They're not going to tolerate football hooligans, are they?
But they've got to tread lightly because they're in the spotlight. They're in the world spotlight. This is what Qatar wanted. This is about building the Qatar brand. This is other than the Olympics, the biggest sporting event in the fucking world.
Fuck them.
So Qatar have got are under the fucking microscope and they're confident. No test events. Just open the doors and see what happens.
Yeah, this is. I mean. You know, there's always been this toxic mix of sport and politics, and normally there's this kind of idea that, you know, if you sort of take a step back, that you shouldn't really punish the sports people for going, you know, and if you could go back over time, I think the only Olympics that was boycotted was the Moscow Olympics, and that was because of the Cold War, you know, and there's a lot of. I mean, Qatar is an extreme example, but there's a lot of countries with a lot of dodgy things going on and people still sort of go to that. So yeah. FIFA bears the absolute blame for it. I also kind of think David Beckham, because I get the whole thing, there has to be an infrastructure. FIFA started this problem by having it in Qatar. So if you work on the basis that there's going to be a World Cup, then you're going to need commentators, you're going to need all the infrastructure around it. I'm not sure David Beckham, you know, to kind of misquote Bill Hicks, you know, I mean, how much money do you need? I'm not sure. You know, he could have thought about that for 10 minutes. You know, he's not some sort of journeyman pros, but he's been offered, you know, £1 million to pay off his mortgage so he can go and, just shut your eyes and look at the check. You know, I think that's, you know, Beckham's...
He's a fucking narcissist.
He's a gay icon.
It's all about him.
Well, he was supposed to be a gay icon.
He was supposed to be a gay icon. He was on the cover of...
Attitude. Men...
I think that was it. But ultimately, I think it's a failure of... Because let's face it, someone like Beckham has advisors. And I think it's the failure of advisors to say, this is a lot of money, David, but... it's going to do reputational damage, and it's the price you put on that. Meanwhile, Victoria is faking his signature on the contract behind the bloke's back. That's unfair. I think it's a poor decision. It's a poor decision by them. But then where does it stop? Gary Neville, are you going to be commentating and doing punditry? Yes, he is. You know, it's like...
Oh, they're all implicated.
But what are they supposed to do? I mean, did we want the BBC to cover the World Cup from the UK and just not go? So you've got Alan Parry in a studio in Shepherd's Bush commentating on the game. We can't do any interviews after the game because they haven't got any media out there.
Well, it's to take you back. You've mentioned Russia. I mean, we knew what had gone on in Crimea. We knew what they'd done in Chechnya prior to that. We knew what they'd done in Syria. So,
and we knew they fancied a rook as well.
And we knew Putin was poisoning and killing people who he didn't like. And that was all pre 2018. So it's like, at some point we have to decide whether we want to do the ethical and morally right thing to do. Or just fuck it, let's just make money and we can't do anything about it. It's like climate change, is it? We can't do anything about it. Fuck it.
I think we've got to see how it plays out because there hasn't been this level of sort of distaste over World Cup before. And I saw an interview with Gary Lineker last week and he said, we'll have to see basically to your point about how the BBC handled it. But he said, some of the highlights programmes are going to be like mini panoramas. And that was just a quote from him. So, you know, maybe they are going to get the balance right and maybe they are going to. But so we won't know till it started. But with the risk of dragging it back to football, I don't know because there's so much. No, but you're right though. This isn't, you know, it's become so much not about football because of the appalling way it was handled and the country that's concerned. But there are teams going there. There are players going there. Right now, we don't give a shit. But probably in about 10 days' time, we'll be hooked, maybe. So, you know, have we got time now to talk about some of the players going, or is that wholly inappropriate? I mean, to me, it's like is this Lionel Messi's last World Cup?
Yes.
Yeah. So,
and Argentina are coming out as a few people's favourites. And I've got to be honest, I can't believe it's as long as it is since Argentina, won the World Cup. And
1990, was it?
86.
86, bloody hell.
When they beat us, yeah.
Wow.
So,
oh, it was Germany in 90, wasn't it? Yeah.
Yeah. The amazing thing is, and this is really weird, you know, because I watched that Italia 90, you know, the Sky documentary, the three episodes. And I meant to say when we were on the subject, you see that England team, you know, and all the rest of it, you think, oh, fucking great. And you see all the German players going like, oh, they had all these great players, blah, blah, blah. And then you think, yeah, typical England. 4 years later, we're not even at the World Cup. We don't even qualify. And then in 96, we do really well. And which member of the 1990 side is still a starting England player? Fucking Stuart Pearce.
Yeah.
I mean, you know, fantastic. But watching that documentary, and you look at that team and the way, you know, the World Cup was organized and everything else, and you just think that is just, it was brilliant. I mean, the Italians putting England on an island.
Yes.
Fucking genius.
Talk about, there's a saying, isn't there? People behave how they're expected to behave. Right, England fans come in. Right, what we need to do is fucking get into them. So get stuck into them. Don't ask any questions. It's like, talk about heavy-handed policing. Ridiculous. It's like, well, they're all, of course they're going to kick off if you spraying them with tear gas and herding them and treating them like shit. It's because of our reputation at the time, of course, because Liverpool fans had destroyed Heysel Stadium.
It doesn't do you any favours when you've got, like, you know, the comedy minister, Colin Moynihan, who looks like he's fallen off a fucking wedding cake. And you know, he's going on, he's basically slagging off his, you know, your own fan base.
Yeah.
It was just...
Yeah, well... Maggie Thatcher, wasn't it? So.
Yeah. I'm sorry, I've dragged us over to 1990, and I genuinely can't remember why.
Well, because Dave was... we were talking about last time Argentina won the World Cup, which was 86, then Dave mentioned 1990. And that was it.
And what I meant to say was that was Germany's fourth World Cup final in a fucking row, I think.
Yeah. And nice parallel, no one gave England a single chance prior to that tournament. I think... The reputation of the team, and Bobby Robson was really unpopular, but slowly but surely everyone got into it. So maybe that'll happen this time. Yeah. Who knows?
Actually, it wasn't their fourth final in a row. I do apologise, because obviously it was Argentina and Holland in 1978.
You're right. They've been in several finals.
Not
most recently was 2014, wasn't it?
And they'd lost them, which is very un-German.
Yeah.
Dragging it back to football, what do we think to Germany? You know, are Germany going to be a threat? I think they're kind of like us. I think, you know, on their day they can beat anyone.
It's not going to happen, but I'd love to see an African team do well, get to the final or the latter stages. But the best chance would have been Senegal, but apparently Mane's out, so. That probably won't happen. It's a bit of a talisman, though, isn't it?
Yeah, I mean, Argentina, people are sort of saying Argentina. Yeah. Are they favourites? Are they bookies' favourites? I think they are, aren't they?
Argentina and Brazil. Yeah.
Are they really? Are they really?
France will do all right, though.
I would have thought France are above Argentina in a favourites perspective, because, of course, they're the holders.
Yeah, that's true.
And so, you know, I think that does put them in there as a potential.
Oh, Brazil are favourites, 7-2. This is from William Hill. This is a few hours ago. Brazil 7-2, Argentina 5-1, then France 7-1, England 7-1, Spain 9-1.
England and France on the same odds.
Yeah. Top goal scorer.
That's ridiculous.
Harry Kane 8-1. Mbappe 8-1, Messi 10-1, Karim Benzema 12-1, and Neymar 12-1.
I have to say, I'm fucking very much anti-betting, but there's some tasty odds there.
Yeah, tenner on Benzema.
I know. Yeah, exactly.
Fucking great. Yeah.
Argentina 5-1.
Yeah.
£50 on that.
That's 50. Yeah, that's pretty good.
That's but if you're thinking of betting, don't. All right. There you go. That's as good as that is as good as the official campaign, isn't it? If you don't when the fun stops, stop.
Yeah,
brilliant.
Which is just
just say no. That's what that is. It's fucking basically the gambling industry has taken Nancy Reagan's mid-80s failed fucking slogan.
Just say no.
I decided to apply it to betting the knob.
It's like telling fat people don't eat cakes, you know what I mean?
Yeah. Crazy.
Am I allowed to say that? Am I allowed to say fat people?
Yes, because none of us are fat.
So where are we going to end up there? Are we going to do it at World Cup 11 or is that for next week?
Next week, I think.
I don't know. I think, do we want to do World Cup 11? Next week, the World Cup started.
Yeah, the only thing I wanted to talk about, if we've got time, is I was trying to tee this up with Messi, it being his last World Cup. It's probably going to be Ronaldo's last World Cup. So you've got these two sort of... I mean, whatever you think, you know, these are the two kind of best players in the world of the last, 10, 15 years. And then they're both coming towards the end of their careers. And it is a bit like the Beatles and the Stones or VCR and Betamax, probably. That's probably a bad analogy. But people have got that. There's a very, you know, you've got the Ronaldo camp and the Messi camp. Personally, I've always been in the Messi camp. And that's just particular. That's just the style. I just love Messi.
Yeah.
That's not to say that Ronaldo isn't an amazing footballer. But what do we make? I've just got this feel. I mean, one of the reasons I want Argentina to win the World Cup is because I want to see Messi go out on a high. And, I mean, Cristiano Ronaldo will never...
Oh, his face. His face. I want to see Messi smiling, lifting the World Cup, and I want a camera on Ronaldo at that moment.
Yeah. Could they meet in the final, potentially?
I don't know. I've not got my wall chart, and not, you know, given the fact that none of us give a shit about this at the moment, I haven't done. I've not done the usual analysis, which is, well, if we come second, we're going to play this team at this time. And I'm in Wales, of course. So Wales are kicking off on Monday, but I don't know if they're playing. But it's England Wales a week on Tuesday.
It's the last group game. Yeah. It's the last group game. And again, I know I've mentioned this before, but, you know, it just highlights how parochial we all are when everybody's going, ooh, England, Wales, oh, England. That'd be a bit tasty, wouldn't it? That'd be a bit feisty. Ooh, hey, England, Wales. What? A bit tasty, a bit feisty. What's the other game in the group that night? USA, Iran.
Yeah.
That's fucking feisty and tasty for you. Yeah?
That's true.
That's feisty and tasty with a mushroom cloud, that fucker. I mean, come on.
Yeah. Quick substitution by Iran. They've taken off Hajib.
hey.
Is that right?
No,
didn't really work. Anyway, so Ronaldo...
Hopefully pitch invasions when Iran plays and it'll just be female Iran fans.
Yeah. That's a good call. So Ronaldo, I just wanted to ask about what you think about this kind of current situation at Man United. And did you see yesterday on Instagram that you posted the Liverpool when Liverpool sang "You'll Never Walk Alone" after he lost his child, and it was an amazing moment. It was an amazing moment that Liverpool fans kind of shown kind of that level of support to, you know, a Man United player and to Cristiano Ronaldo. Showed a lot of class on the part of Liverpool. But Ronaldo kind of posted this on Instagram yesterday and said, you know, how shocked he was that the cop was singing this. And he said, contrast this with Manchester United, who have shown no empathy at all throughout the whole thing. So it sort of struck me on a few levels that, but on a slightly cheeky level, is, do you think this is Ronaldo trying to sign for Liverpool?
I think it's Ronaldo trying to make the point. And funnily enough, I have heard Mark Chapman, fantastic broadcaster, say, look, towards the end of all the Ronaldo debates about what's happened, every time he's very careful to bring it back to, he lost a child.
Yeah.
He is still grieving.
Yeah.
It's a human being.
Grief does weird things to people.
Yeah, I totally agree.
he may look back on this in years to come and think, what was I doing? Because the thing is, as well, is the way it's been done is so bad as well. You know, it's been done with Piers Morgan on a TV channel with, like, what, 50,000 subscribers? It doesn't matter. It's going to go viral anyway. But, and the things he said, some of the things he shouldn't have said, you know, it's like, it's the whole thing is just a bit scattergun, a bit all over the place. But I didn't know about that post on Instagram. And I think that speaks hugely to what is at the heart of this. I think Ronaldo feels that after everything that's been going on in his life, and he feels like the club have basically cut him adrift.
Yeah, not the tasking properly. And I sort of agree with that. And there's this other thing, because I do think it's more nuanced than you think this. Because, I mean, I would naturally kind of, I don't particularly like Ronaldo, and I would naturally kind of knee-jerk kind of slag him off for what's happened here. It's an easy case to make. And a lot of the papers have said, you know, it's time for him to move on. He's bigger than the club. He's an egomaniac. All those things are true, by the way. I do think he's an egomaniac. But then there's the Roy Keane view, which is kind of like you're showing a lack of respect, you know, by putting him on for 3 minutes and him refusing to go on against Tottenham. And that voice is easy to drown out, given everything else we know about Ronaldo. But I sort of think there is a case to answer it. And it comes back to almost a parallel with Qatar. In the same way that we should never have given Qatar the World Cup, Ronaldo should never have signed, gone back to Man United. I think that was, once that happened.
Yeah. You know, well, the thing is, the evidence is there.
Could be a circus straight away, isn't it?
Yeah, but it's not even that. It's the footballing evidence that you have.
Exactly.
The footballing evidence says that when Ronaldo plays for you, he does really well, and you have to focus the team around him. Your team is not going to do as well as it did before he arrived. That's what happened at Juventus. That's why they got rid of him in the end. And like the following season, players were saying, it's more of a team, we're more focused. And what happened last season? It's a damning indictment of the fact that that is true. Yeah. Ronaldo had a great season, and Man United had their worst season in the Premier League since it was formed. This is what happens when you sign Ronaldo. From a footballing point of view, forget everything else. That's what happens on the pitch. Yeah. And that is why they shouldn't have signed him. But what I love about it is City win.
Yeah.
City, if he hadn't been talking to City, I don't think he'd be at Man United.
No.
But that could not happen. Ferguson even got involved to make sure it didn't happen.
Yeah,
well, how's that worked out for you guys? How's that worked out for you?
Yeah,
because I'm going to say badly.
Yeah, I mean, your point about Ronaldo is right at the footballing side. Certainly a latter-day Ronaldo. I mean, when he was at Real Madrid, he was part of an amazing team and what a player. But yeah, I mean, that's the problem, that when you get to a certain age as a footballer, you know, it's kind of like, and again, I have sympathy for him, because it just shows how competitive it is. It shows all the qualities that made him great, is that he refuses to give up. He won't accept that he's not the player he used to be, which is the hardest thing to do.
Spot on. It's his age. And the thing is, I think if you combine that with, like, put it this way, not only are you used to being the first name on the team sheet, never mind playing every week, but then becoming a sub is heartbreaking. Tie that together with, you're no longer good enough to be in the starting 11 and losing a child. You know, it's basically a time of life thing. You know, it's a time of life thing. It's a, you're getting old. You're 38. You're not who you used to be. And the reason why Man United can't play him, any side, you watch what he did at Juventus, you watch what he did at Man United. The ball goes to Ronaldo. He puts his foot on it, stops, and cuts it. And the minute he does that, your attack loses.
It's
pace. It loses its momentum. And that's one of the key reasons why. And that's because Ronaldo used to pick the ball up and run with it. And you just can't do it as much anymore. And to your point about Messi, I meant to say this at the time, but I heard a great point when Bale was at Real Madrid, and someone said, who's best, Ronaldo or Messi? And he said, well, that's easy. It's Messi. The reason it's easy and the reason it's Messi is, as good as Ronaldo is, you can always find somebody else who can do the same job. And they've just bought somebody who plays over the other side of the pitch and does exactly the same thing. Now, admittedly, Bale shows how hard it is to stay at that level and deliver at that level. But the point he was making is, work hard, You can become Ronaldo. Doesn't matter how hard you work, you can never become Messi.
Good point. And I've got another piece of breaking news for you, which is unbelievably linked to what we're saying. It's just come up in The Guardian. Manchester United to sue Cristiano Ronaldo over interview.
Fucking hell. Oh, they've gone nuclear. They have gone nuclear. They are going to sue their own player.
Wow.
Well, breach of contract.
I have to say, a point I was going to make earlier, which I thought is going to come from a City fan as an outrageous slur, has now got more. I was going to say that when they signed Ronaldo, it was like a small club move. You know, when United were at their peak, they would never have signed an eight. They'd never have. Ferguson would never have re-signed David Beckham. It's a small club
absolutely.
Move. And this is a small club move. Suing your own player. There you go. I've got no further on that, but there you go.
Do you know what? I'm gonna be racist about it. It's not a small club move. This is how, and you're gonna find this out maybe one day, Dave, but this is how American owners work.
Yeah. Yeah.
This is Donald Trump playbook move number one.
Yeah. No, you're right.
No, true. Yeah, this classic response, the American response is litigation.
But maybe this was brought on by the Instagram post and everything else. I think Man United have said, you know what? We have got to shut this down. He now cannot say a word.
He's damaging the brand.
He has to. Yeah. Well, no, he has to shut the fuck up. It's a legal case. He can't. Yeah. He cannot comment.
Mm.
So they've shut it down. They've shut him up. They've gagged him.
Yeah.
He can't speak now because it's now an active legal case. Or Ronaldo, given his ego, will ignore that and carry on.
Yeah.
You know.
You're being contacted. Yeah.
Unfortunately, your club not supporting you very much through an emotional hard time is not illegal or breach of contract.
Yeah.
And I think Ronaldo has acted out of emotion during this, you know, this whole thing is driven by emotion. And the one thing that's no use to you in a court of law is emotion. Absolutely. Yeah. All that does is give you a reason as to why you fucked up. All that is an excuse, a reason, a plead for mitigation because emotion. Because, you know.
Ronaldo has been instructed not to return to the club's Carrington training base.
Well, yeah, they're suing him. I think.
Yeah. Well, I don't think he was going to rock up anyway.
No. It's like what?
Kick some balls about.
Can't come in.
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, there you go.
He must be gutted that he's not able to turn up at the Carrington training ground whilst he's on holiday in fucking Qatar.
Yeah, I mean that's quite shocking news, really.
Well, look on that bombshell. On that bombshell, ladies and gentlemen, and I don't know why I said ladies, gentlemen. Yeah, because there's just like no female listeners. That's it. Forget it. And that's not because women don't like football. It's because we don't have any female listeners.
They don't like us. Yeah.
Yeah. If you know any female football fans, try and steer them in the direction of this podcast.
Who like aging white middle age people. Yeah. So what I was going to say. Yeah. So maybe we can get stuck into the World Cup 11 next week then, because we might actually care about the World Cup this time next week.
Yeah. Why not? I would say, hey, everybody out there, let us know what you'd like us to do. But, you know, we haven't got any socials and don't really care. So we'll decide, not you. We will. So anyway, as always, thank you, Mr. David Klein.
Thank you.
And Mr. Dave Rothney.
Cheers.
Thank you very much, listeners. Catch you next time.